I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
I'm glad to be here with you again.
The other day I was having a look over your revamped Property Edge website. Something on there caught my eye. You posed three rather interesting questions designed to help people focus their efforts when looking for suitable investment opportunities. Would you perhaps like to expand on this for our listeners?
Yeah, look, it's interesting you ask that question, Ken, because I've recently run a webinar for my mentor group, and that was one of the topics that was raised, is that being able to get a clear focus on what you should be concentrating your efforts on. And I mean, as I said to the mentor group, it's a lot of people have been residential investors up till now, and the selection process there is pretty easy. But you see, when you have more to choose from than just a house or an apartment, particularly commercial property, because you've got things like shops, offices or warehouses, or sometimes a combination of offices and warehouses, it can be confusing. And even if you decide upon one particular sector that you want to focus on, then there's location, both locally, suburbs, but also where in Australia. So sometimes it's hard to work out with this huge choice as to what you should do. And as such, it can be a little daunting. But as you say, the place to start is what's possible. And with commercial property, as I said, you get to choose between the shops, offices, warehouses, etc. But also, you get to choose between whether it's a standalone property or a strata titled property. Now, generally, if you're at the smaller end of the market, say up to about $1 million, it's more likely to be a strata titled property. Once you get larger than that, sort of $1.5 to $3 million, you can pretty well ensure that you get a standalone title. But even still, there are some, you know, large properties that are sold, even the sort of $8 to $10 million, that are still might be part of an owner's corporation with a strata title. It might, for all intents and purposes, look as though it's standalone because the property is self-contained. It might be a couple of floors and you rent it from the ground floor, but it may still be a strata title. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just giving you the cross-section. So you need to then decide upon or understand what is available in the marketplace, and you then need to take the next step of working out where in that marketplace you want to focus your attention.
So once they've established what's possible, what do they need to address next?
Okay, well, once you're aware of what it is you can, in fact, purchase, then you need to work out what is appropriate for you. And this comes down to probably working out how the amount of money you've got to spend. And, you know, we talk about, there's been a lot of talk, particularly with the election, about negative gearing and the pluses and minuses. But whether you borrow to the point where it is negatively geared, you need to understand what your comfort level is. Now, you know, some people can happily borrow 75%, and for commercial property, that's about where it'll max out. With residential, you can get 80, 85%. But then again, there are some people who feel that anything over 50% is going to cause them to lose sleep at night. So you need to work out, we affectionately call your threshold of insomnia, as to what your borrowing levels are, because it's the combination of the amount of equity you have, either in cash or through a line of credit with another property. You might own a home or maybe another commercial property. But the combination of that is, with the amount of borrowing, is going to work out where in the marketplace you can look. And so in answering the question about what's truly appropriate, you start to identify what are your genuine options, and therefore the marketplace is not quite as daunting because you realise you simply can't afford some of those larger properties, and not at the moment anyway. You might graduate to them in time, but all of a sudden it brings your marketplace down to something that is far more manageable.
In the final question, you ask investors to fully grasp what they are capable of. Exactly what are you asking them to consider here?
Well, when we're talking about what you're capable of, really this is a reference to your available resources. Now, money's one resource that you've got available, but also you've got to think of time availability. And for most people, when they're starting out, it's not going to be a full-time exercise. And therefore, it's going to be done mostly after hours, or at least in your available time. So you need to ensure that you don't overstretch yourself. So as far as cash is concerned, I mean, you might be a bit short on equity or available cash. And one of the things you could do is to join with another investor, might be a friend or colleague, or a group of investors in a syndicate. And what that does is that by pooling it, you can put in a relatively low amount. It might only be, say, $100 or $1,000 or $150. And if you put 10 people together in a private syndicate, well, all of a sudden you've got somewhere to $1 million to $1.5 million in equity, and you can step into a bigger league and buy better value if you're able to do that. But, you know, let's assume that you are going to go forward on your own. You need to just make sure what your available cash is, and therefore what you're able to purchase. And as I said, that scopes your marketplace. And it's a simple process, but it's something that is probably, you know, best depicted in graphically. And what I will do, Ken, is I'll make sure that I upload the explanation graphically as to how these three questions interrelate, and therefore leave you with an answer as to how to go through it all.
And then the final step requires them to combine everything.
Yeah, well, that's what I was just alluding to. As I said, let me give you that graphic, which combines these three filters, for want of a better word. In other words, what's possible, what's appropriate, and what you're capable of investing in. And what it does, it reveals what I refer to as your core area of focus. And, you know, contrary to popular opinion, the smaller the list of available or potential properties that you have that you can focus on, the clearer and more successful your investment strategy is likely to be. Now, this might all sound disarmingly simple, but it's a process that I find even long-term seasoned investors will quite regularly go back to make sure that they haven't been drawn out of what is their main core area of focus. And it just keeps them grounded, it keeps them, well, focused, and make sure that they don't spread themselves too thin. Because once you end up becoming distracted, and it's easy to do that, as something, what appears to be attractive, comes available, if it doesn't really fit within what you've defined through this process as your core area of focus, it does mean that you will either start to spread yourself too thin time-wise, or as far as your available resources in cash and so forth are available. Now, you know, you can multiply your time by engaging consultants. And I think, you know, that's one thing I encourage. I mean, you should have your legal and building and finance and so forth all available. Everyone that can help you shorten the timeline. And also, all your consultants, you know, when I act for someone, there are things that I can anticipate. As events occur, I know from experience that as a result of that happening, something else is going to occur down the track. So you can step around it. Now, if you're doing it for the first time, you're not even aware. And unfortunately, you get to the end of the process and you realize there could be a trail of debris there, which has in and of itself not killed the deal, but certainly taken the financial gloss off what would have otherwise been a very successful deal.
I noticed the third question about what they are capable of addresses the issue of your available funds. Is that something that investors can often miscalculate?
Well, that's another thing. I mean, what you've got to be careful of is that you go through the calculations I mentioned earlier, but two of the greatest dangers that property investors face are that they fail to include the full equity that is stored up in various properties. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean if you're going to get a line of credit, you borrow to the hilt. But with other properties that you may have paid off fully, you can either draw down on the facility again, but you're probably better to have it revalued at a higher figure. And what it means is you have that line of credit there, so you know, added to your cash available as far as equity, you can draw down to a certain figure. Now, that doesn't mean you go and spend it all, because one of the things I recommend is that everyone has an amount of money put aside equal to at least 3 months' interest. So if for whatever reason the tenant didn't pay their rent on time and you missed a month, it wouldn't really matter. You've got enough cash to cover it until the tenant gets back on track. Now, it doesn't mean the tenant's faltering. There might be legitimate reasons why that rent didn't come in, but you just need to have that coverage. The other thing is that most people initially, when they start out, tend to forget your acquisition costs. I mean, things like stamp duty. I mean, that by itself is 5.5% of the purchase price. But then you've got your legals, you've got your due diligence, you've got finance, you've got valuations, all those sort of things. And I generally allow about 8% on top. Now, you'll get change out of that. It sort of ranges, I think, between, depending on the property, you know, 7.25% to 7.75%. So allow 8. And so you need to have a simple way of, when you plug in your equity of cash and then the value of a property and that you might already own, and then the value of what you've got borrowed at the moment, and you need a simple formula to project the maximum amount conservatively that you could pay for a property, allowing for your acquisition costs. Now, what I've done, and I'll put a link to the Property Edge page, the new revamped site that I've put there, a link where you can actually go through that process and enter into the calculator that I've put on there the various figures that I've mentioned, the your equity, the value of the property, the amount of borrowings you've got, and it will conservatively for you calculate out the maximum amount that you can afford to spend and know that everything is covered. And, you know, it's important, and that's why I put this tool there on the Property Edge website, so that people with the best intentions don't go off and with less equity than there's actually available, and not accounting for the acquisition costs that run with every property when you buy it as an investor. And you need to know comfortably what it is. And the last thing you want to do is have to sit down with an Excel spreadsheet and every property you plug it in and laboriously work all those things out. So I've done all that, designed that little program, had it built and forms part of the web page. So as I said, I'll pop that link there so that people are able to go in and very quickly make that calculation to know that they're not going to underspend or overspend relative to their available equity and the costs involved.
I guess many people, me included, tend to think that they have the entire commercial property market to choose from. Whereas, from what you're saying, in reality, this is not the case.
That's right. And that's good news, because otherwise the process would become totally overwhelming. You see, it's a bit like going to a restaurant with a 20-page menu. You quickly get the feeling that you may not eat that night, simply because the choice is too large and confusing. And then someone says, look, the lamb shanks look good. And then immediately two or three others in the group will say, I think I'll have that too. So you see, once you have focus, decisions then become easy.
Yes, I know the feeling. And thanks, Chris. I just love the way you're able to reduce things down to the fundamental issues.